Well, today it's going to be more like Murdaugh in the morning, because we are going to be going through the affidavit, the motion to suspend appeal and for leave to file motion for new trial. It's already sounding confusing, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
But let's make this as confusing as possible. What this essentially means, everyone, is that this is not the actual appeal for a... It is an appeal for a new trial, but this is not an appeal. It's an appeal based on the motion something was amiss with the jurors. They still have an appeal in their back pocket. If for some reason this goes nowhere, they can go to the other one. But this right now is what they're going to file on specifically because of the accusations of misconduct with the jury and the jury foreperson. I try to make this as simple as possible because it is very confusing as to how this all functions. But before anything else, and there's a lot of motions that they can file, this is the one they're going with out of the gate, and it is a damn strong one. It may take them all the way back. It will likely take them back into the courtroom, and then a judge would have to decide. If they get the appellate hearing, the judge could decide for the motion of the new trial. We're going to go through this. We're going to read it word for word. It may sound a little bit legalese here and there, but we'll do our best to try and explain it the best we can and get through as much of it as we can. This is like a massive document. It's, I think, what, like 90 or 65 pages long.
65 pages, it's pretty extensive.
Whole thing here in front of me, and we're just going to work our way. So I'm going to start with the initial motion to suspend appeal. Appellate Richard Alexander Murdaugh, pursuant to Rule 29B of the South Carolina Rules of Criminal Procedure, hereby moves for leave to file a motion for a new trial based on after-discovered evidence in the Court of General Sessions and to suspend this appeal during the pendency of the motion. Appellant offers a copy of the motion for a new trial attached as Exhibit 1, which we're going to go to next, with its own exhibits labeled Exhibit A through Exhibit L, and the memorandum in support of this motion and documents supporting facts relied upon not contained on the record on appeal as required by Rule 240 of the South Carolina Rules of Appellate Procedure. So this is Exhibit 1. This is the actual motion we're going for right now, which is going to outline in a lot of detail why they're filing this, why they feel they have the grounds to file it, and how absolutely insane this is, that they're of the behavior of the clerk of court, if in fact it is true. The thing I've heard from many people over the last 24, 48 hours is I've never seen anything like this. Experienced attorneys, experienced anybody in this field, is never, ever have we seen a clerk of court do something like this if the allegations are true. Here we go. Defendant Richard Alexander Murdaugh, through undersigned counsel pursuant to Rule 29B of the South Carolina Rules of Criminal Procedure, hereby moves the court for a new trial after discovering, and here's how they qualify it, that the clerk of court tampered with the jury by advising them not to believe Murdaugh's testimony and other evidence presented by the defense, pressuring them to reach a quick guilty verdict, and even misrepresenting critical and material information to the trial judge in her campaign to remove a juror she believed to be less favorable to the defense. That is referencing a juror that she had removed based on claims of a Facebook post from their ex-husband, which he says he's never posted. And the records from Facebook also show never posted about this. So it kind of, did you make this up? And that's, I think, what we're wondering. Specifically, during the Colton County Clerk of Court, Rebecca Hill, during the trial, instructed jurors not to be misled by evidence presented in Murdaugh's defense. She told jurors not to be fooled by Mr. Murdaugh's testimony in his own defense. Ms. Hill had frequent private conversations with the jury foreperson, a court-appointed substitution for the foreperson the jury elected for itself at the request of Ms. Hill. So Ms. Hill had a role in changing the jury foreperson in the middle of the trial. This, if you notice, the jury foreperson that was there at the beginning is not the same jury foreperson at the end that gives verdict. During the trial, Ms. Hill asked jurors for their opinions about Mr. Murdaugh's guilt or innocence. I'm speaking here. Number one, you can't do that. Continuing on, Ms. Hill invented a story about a Facebook post to remove a juror she believed might not vote guilty. Ms. Hill pressured the jurors to reach a quick verdict, telling them from the outset of their deliberations that it shouldn't take them long. Ms. Hill did these things to secure for herself a book deal and media appearances that would not happen in the event of a mistrial. Ms. Hill betrayed her oath of office and for money and fame. Once these facts are proven, the law does not allow the court any discretion how to respond. It must grant a new trial. And it really, if these things are true, it checks those boxes and then some. You have two factors that you need to reach to get the judge to look at granting a new trial. One of those things, it's information that was not available during the actual time of the trial. This was not fully knowledgeable. People were not in the know that these sort of things were happening, certainly to this extent. And then the other thing that they have to take a look at is, would those events that they were unaware of in any way affect, or could they in any way affect, the verdict itself? And if you have the jury the clerk of court going in and saying these things to the jurors and also really pushing them along, get this verdict done, because tonight, if you don't have it, you're going to a hotel room and nobody has bags. So you're going to have to go do that. You can't go back home tonight. They told them that this is what she said to them at the last minute. And no smoking breaks. Apparently, six of the jurors were smokers. They were not allowed to go on any smoking breaks during the deliberation because this clerk of court, rather, wanted them to reach that verdict and push them to do it very fast. Now, could they have
done? They need to get to the bottom of what was your reasoning for saying all of these things to the jury? This is really inappropriate.
It's gross.
You're not supposed to interfere in any way.
It is gross misconduct. I mean, this is just the basic 101 of the job. You can't do these sort of things.
I mean, I'm supposed to do jury duty the 18th of September that week, and I've already been given like a worksheet. Here's what you need to do as a potential juror. So, I mean, they set you up like letting you know that this is a legal proceeding. There are rules and regulations that you must follow. And this is somebody who works for the court. That's insane.
If these allegations all turn out to be true, Ms. Hill needs to be behind bars for a very long time. Because I also wonder how many other cases, they're going to have to go back and look at every single case this person was involved in. And God knows, I don't know how long she's been the clerk of court. We should look into that. In fact, if you could, try and find that out while I read some of this, because I'm curious just how long has this person had their hands in the world of South Carolina law. As Reba said, don't trust your soul to a backwoods Southern lawyer. I guess you can't even trust your soul to the courts themselves either, with the amount of corruption that this indicates. When we go to the
state, and somebody else had to have known, like if she's been screwing with other cases, you don't do that in a vacuum. People are around you. They hear you say things and their ears perk up. Did I just hear what I thought I heard? Somebody has to know that she's been up to some bullshit.
My feel is that this is just systemic of the entire setting there, quite honestly. There's so much corruption, it seems, that goes on, specifically in this county. What we knew about what Murdaugh was up to and what a lot of his co-conspirators were up to. And it very much is a good old boys club. And if you're in the know and you got some power, people tend to abuse their power there pretty readily. So I do wonder how much of a culture this existed. And it was just, no one's going to stop us. This is a high profile case. So, I mean, there was a little bit more incentive to dig deeper here. But I'm going to just take a wild guess here that this is part of a very big culture of corruption in that general area. Is everyone corrupt there? No.
What I was wondering about yesterday was this, like, maybe she had a relationship. I don't mean like an affair, but maybe she had a relationship with Murdaugh because he'd been in the system for so long.
And then she wanted to
screw
him?
She was going to screw with it.
Yeah. The only other, if you're going to go down the conspiracy theory road, the other thing I thought of today was, but here's what makes it make no sense is if they're going to have somebody go and do this, someone's going to take a fall. And if this shit is real, she's going to jail for a long time. Yeah. So I can't see anybody sacrificing themselves to get Alec Murdaugh a new trial, more or less the clerk of courts. where the conspiracy would be that she's going to make all these claims and is going to stir all this shit up. I mean, there's a lot of things that would need to fall into place, and a lot of people need to be paid off to make that theory work, and I don't think it makes any sense at all. I don't know that there's much of a conspiracy to this. I think this is a person acting with running bad acts is really what we're talking about here. I don't really see another direction on it, but who knows?
I absolutely agree with you. I did find the information you were hoping for. Yeah. She has been a... Okay, let me go back just a second. She is a relatively new clerk. While she had worked as a court reporter for over a decade, she had only been elected to the position back in November 2020. She had been a middle school teacher, worked in the state and local disability agency, and held administrative roles in law offices before working as a court reporter for 14 years. So she has been exposed to the court for plenty of time.
Yeah. In this capacity, though, since 2020.
Correct.
And a lot of that was online hearings and online testimony, things of that nature with COVID. Well, it's good that she hasn't been doing this since 98.
Right.
That would be a lot of cases to go through. Let's start by going through the statement of facts, and we'll go on this for a little while. Then our segment two will continue on. It says, Mr. Murdaugh was indicted for the murder of his wife, Maggie, and his son, Paul, on July 14th of 2022. His murder trial began January 23rd of 2023. The presiding judge was the Honorable Clifton Newman. The trial ran for 6 weeks, ending with convictions on the evening of March 2nd, 2023, and sentencing on March 3rd of 2023. The state rested its case in chief, and the defense began its case on Friday, February 17th, 2023. Court was not held on February 20th, which was President's Day. After returning from the holiday, Ms. Hill began to enter the jury rooms often. After juror number 630, August 14th, 2023, attached as Exhibit A, as the defense began its case, Ms. Hill told jurors, "Y'all are going to hear things that will throw you off. Don't let this distract you or mislead you." That's in the affidavit of Holly Miller. That's a juror number 741 that is in the affidavit. Exhibit B that we see here, additionally, Ms. Hill, and juror number 286, the new jury foreperson, on multiple occasions went to another room to have private conversations lasting 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes they would go to the jury room single occupancy bathroom together. Foreperson juror number 826 never said anything about the content of those conversations to other jurors. Ms. Hill even instructed jurors they could not ask foreperson juror number 826 about the conversations. 2 days later, on Thursday, February 23rd, and continuing through the next day, Mr. Murdaugh testified in his own defense. Before he began his testimony, Ms. Hill told the jurors, and this is where it gets really fucking damning. Right before Alec went to take the stand, she goes to the jurors and says, "Not to be fooled by the evidence Mr. Murdaugh's attorneys presented," which at least one juror understood to mean that Mr. Murdaugh would lie when he testified. Ms. Hill also, and it's essentially what you're saying. And it's pretty, the thing with all of this is, Alec Murdaugh was ready to hang himself. Literally and figuratively in many ways. But he was on his own track. He didn't need the extra shove by Miss Clerk of Courts to be found guilty.
Yeah.
But now, because she felt she needed her little narcissistic handprint on this in some way, shape, or form so she could write her self-published book, this is going to derail this entire fucking thing. Ms. Hill also instructed the jury to watch him closely and to look at his actions and to look at his movements, which at least one juror understood to mean that Mr. Murdaugh was guilty. Immediately after Mr. Murdaugh testified, foreperson juror number 826 told the jury that Mr. Murdaugh was crying on cue. She also criticized the former foreperson juror number 589 for handing Mr. Murdaugh a box of tissues when he was crying on the stand, because that is what the defense wants us to do. The next day after Mr. Murdaugh's testimony, Monday, February 27th, Ms. Hill told Judge Newman about a Facebook post she purportedly saw on the evening of Friday, February 24th, the day Mr. Murdaugh's testimony concluded. While pursuing a Facebook group page called Waterboro Word of Mouth, Draft TR of In Camera, this is some sort of reference attached on Exhibit C, the post purportedly by juror number 785's ex-husband, Tim Stone, allegedly stated that his ex-wife was saying that she was on the jury and saying stuff about how her verdict was going to be. Judge Newman asked her to produce a copy of the posting. She could not produce a copy, but according to Ms. Hill, a subordinate employee of the clerk's office, Lori Weiss, discovered that the post was taken down and replaced with an apology post saying, "Folks, I posted an ugly post yesterday to which I have deleted, and I kind of, in a roundabout way, directed it toward a certain person that I would like to apologize to everyone who read it. That ugly for me to do that. And yes, I let Satan control me and I broke down and started drinking. And when I was drunk, I made that post and I'm sorry." Satan also prevents him to use punctuation marks.
Apparently, and good grammar.
And good grammar and anything above a second grade level of writing, it's Satan's fault. I'm just going to throw that in there because why not? You know, when you're going to say Satan's doing everything, you know, let him do everything.
Rebecca, I'm going to remember that when I post something I shouldn't post.
Satan made me do it. Rebecca Hill, Behind the Doors of Justice. This is exhibit number D in the Timothy Stone Facebook post, February 16th, 2023, attached as exhibit E. The apology post states the initial post was already deleted on February 16th. So it would have been impossible for Ms. Hill to see the original post on September 24th. So she made it up.
I absolutely love it.
And this is insane. And in no way, shape, or form did I ever think I'm going to be sticking up for Alec fucking Murdaugh.
Right? It puts you in a really weird position because this entire time we've just had this belief that he is so guilty, and here we are like, this is wrong.
He may be guilty as shit, but you can't run a trial like this.
Not in America. I've said it before, but we have rules and regulations and ways that we do things here. This is not it.
I don't care if it's Jeffrey Dahmer we're talking about. If this happened in his trial or something, I would be saying the same thing. This is about principles. This is about the rule of law and how we function and what we say is right and what is wrong, despite all the things that go wrong in our legal system and we think there's miscarriages of justice, which of course there are. But at the very foundation, if we know for a fact that someone is tainting this and purposely trying to change verdicts, I don't care anything. It needs to be redone because that's just how it works. And if we don't accept that, then we don't accept the way that our judicial system works. Mr. Stone, juror number 785's ex-husband, avers to a sworn statement that he made no such post. Tim Stone saying that in Exhibit F. Mr. Murdaugh has obtained an authentic download of the entirety of Mr. Stone's Facebook activity from January 23rd, 2023 to March 2nd, 2023, which confirms he did not post the apology. The supposed original post, if deleted, would be recoverable at this point under Facebook's retention policies. And if that he, in fact, never posted anything to the Waterboro Word of the Mouth Facebook page during the trial, affidavit of Philip Barber in Exhibit G, the person who made the apology post is an unrelated person, also named Tim Stone, whose Facebook profile picture is not juror number 785's ex-husband. So they're doing some digging here and they're finding some facts here. As goofy as I think, I don't want to say goofy, maybe goofy is the wrong word. Maybe backwoods Southern lawyer, don't trust your soul to one of them, as I feel about Dick Harpootalin and Jim Griffin. They're right. If these are facts, they're right that this is not remotely okay. There is more to come on this. I'm going to wrap up this segment here. In our next segment, we're going to continue going through the main part of this affidavit and lining out in detail everything, not just the talking points of all that's being laid out, so you understand the gravity of this filing and where it is likely to go. That's coming up next. Press subscribe.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member, exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.